Hello! Wow, I can't believe I'm doing this. Welcome back to the Azeem Digital Asks podcast. It has been a while. It's not been since 2022, which was like forever ago. I've been busy, I'm not going to lie. The downsides of being a one-man band is that sometimes things have to take a break, otherwise life will force you to take a break. You're not here to listen to any of that nonsense, though. I've got a fantastic episode to kick off the new season. We're talking all about how small and scrappy businesses can compete with bigger players. And I've got a wonderful guest, Joe Walters. I'm going to shut up now, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me. It's an honour.
It has been a pleasure. And for the listeners and viewers' benefit, don't forget you can watch on Spotify video or YouTube. I definitely want to call out the fact that we have been planning this episode for like one whole year.
Oh, I don't know. That makes it sound like we've been really planning and it's going to be epic. I feel like we should manage some expectations and back down. Hopefully it'll be worth the wait.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, let's just get right into it. For those people who shamefully do not know who you are, would you mind giving a short and brief introduction to yourself?
So my name's Joe and I work currently as a freelance kind of communications and marketing specialist. But I guess in line with the theme of our episode, it definitely fit the small and scrappy jack of all trades, master of some, I like to think, thing. My professional background is actually in student unions, who are absolutely small and scrappy organisations. So I worked at Sussex Students Union for a long time and I now largely freelance with student unions. But I also work on other things such as Brighton SEO. It's probably the kind of most well-known project that I work on. And even though they are the world's largest search marketing conference, they're also what I would kind of consider to be a small and scrappy ragtag bunch of people putting things together. So, yeah, definitely the idea of being a small small and scrappy organization is definitely something that's been a theme in my career, certainly.
Awesome. I am very much looking forward to this. So, look, let's just get right into it and start straight for the jugular. So how can smaller and scrappy businesses, as you put it, how do they compete with bigger organisations, bigger budgets? How do they compete?
Well, I mean, I think it's a thing that's really, as I said, it's been a theme in my career. And I think that, you know, when we look at like your case studies and, you know, people that speak at conferences and you hear about people who say, you know, oh, we had a budget of this many thousands or millions, you know, have our team of 17 people, you know, I used to sit there and I'd be thinking, well, you know, you're hearing about someone, you know, I remember someone saying, oh, you know, we only spent £15,000 on this video. And I was like, I don't think I spend that in a year on everything. You know, like here's me trying to, you know, stretch my 70p across things. Or, you know, you hear about teams with massive, you know, loads of people and there's, you know, three analytics specialists. And I think, well, you know, maybe if I remember every few months, I'll, you know, log into analytics, look at it, and go, oh, graphs. And then that's it. And I think it's easy to feel like I can't compete. You know, look at all these people with all this, you know, all these amazing opportunities, these massive budgets, these big teams. But I think that, you know, it's kind of the David and Goliath thing, right? It's really easy to underestimate kind of small and scrappy teams, small and scrappy organizations. And I think that there's real magic in there. I think that we are often able to be more nimble. We can kind of change and adapt, experiment. You don't have to go through, you know, 17 layers of sign off. You can just try something on a whim. And I think also that limitations on things like budget and on, you know, how many people you've got, they make you more creative. They make you more innovative because you can't just throw money and kind of resource at a problem. You have to improvise. And I think there's sort of, there's magic in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And someone like me who's done something like this before, a lot of what you said absolutely resonates. I guess the key thing for me that I'm sure many of the listeners and viewers will be keen to understand is when you are the sort of small and scrappy player against bigger organizations and you need to execute a campaign or you need to execute an initiative, where do you begin?
Well, when I started freelancing, so I freelance under the name 25 Dots, And, you know, I had visions of building a massive agency. You know, I was like, oh, we're going to have these swanky offices, you know, flashy logo, you know, the cliche pool tables, even though I hate pool, and beers on a Friday, even though I don't drink beer, you know, like that's what I wanted to do. And it was only after a little while I thought, well, actually, those are all the things I hate. And those are all the things, like, I don't want, you know, I love working from home. I love working by myself and, you know, and being able to kind of pull different people in. I didn't want to have to, you know, worry about paying, you know, how am I going to pay everyone? But initially when I started freelancing, I did a lot of the, you know, writing like, we do this, you know, you can get us to do this. And I was sort of, it's like, it's me and my cats who, I mean, they are not pulling their weight in the office. And I sort of thought I needed to pretend I was bigger than I was, that, you know, that I had a massive team. And actually, it's been quite liberating to go, no, it's just me. And, like, you know, I can work with other freelancers. I have other people that I can collaborate with. But for me, it was quite liberating to go, yeah, like, I'm not a big, you know, I'm not a big agency. And actually, that has benefits. So, you know, you will be dealing with me. It's not something where you're going to meet someone who's going to kind of schmooze you and razzle-dazzle you, but then you get handed off to some other complete random person. You're not having to pay for all those free beers on a Friday and that pool table. You know, you are, you know, I'm able to be more kind of agile and lean. And so for me, it was starting from realizing it was okay to be just me and that I didn't have to pretend I was something I wasn't and that people would be okay with that. And so that for me was quite a good starting point and of seeing the benefits of being just me.
Yeah, I like that. That's really open source. So thank you for sharing that. I do appreciate it. I'm sure the audience will too. I'd love to follow up on that and just dig a little bit deeper if that's okay. So I'm imagining when you're in the middle of doing something or executing something that you're wearing many hats or spinning many plates or insert any other metaphor there, but we'll stick with the spinning plates one.
Yeah.
How do you ensure you're keeping on top of everything?
Well, to be honest, I'm not always. And I think, you know, that's been interesting when, you know, I can't blame anyone else if something's late or if something's not working.
Yeah.
But actually, it's been really nice that to see that my clients, you know, they're okay with that. And that so that communication is really important. You know, if something's been delayed or, you know, isn't happening as we originally discussed. And the many hats thing, for me, I really like. It really suits me. I have a somewhat chaotic brain and, you know, the variety of doing that. And I think, you know, and professionally speaking, initially I was really worried that, you know, I wasn't a specialist in anything. You know, the kind of jack of all trades thing. You know, I was sort of worried. I thought, you know, I can't do, you know, a paid ad campaign as well as someone who's a paid ad specialist. And I thought that was, you know, that was a really bad thing. You know, everyone's, you know, why would they pick me? But I realized that I do have specialisms in some things. So, you know, I have a specialism in working with student unions and understanding their challenges. So that's kind of one thing. But that actually being able to adapt and to spin all those plates, that's a skill, that's a specialism. And so, you know, being able to kind of muck in, which I think, you know, a lot of smaller organizations are very used to that, of, you know, doing a little bit of everything. So I definitely think that, yeah, being able to kind of juggle things is a useful thing to clients. But also knowing where my strengths and weaknesses are and where I, you know, do need to bring in other people and which projects to say no to as well. That's been a big learning curve as a freelancer, certainly, of working out what suits me and what I just won't, you know, realistically be able to do.
Yeah. I'm keen to follow up there. So if you're comfortable sharing, I'd love to hear from you. If there was one, what was that moment for you where you thought, yes, made the right decision, being my own boss? Was there ever a moment where you were like, boom, this is it?
So I've always wanted to be my own boss. I think it's just because I'm quite bossy. so actually having other people tell me what to do, maybe he's not such a thing. But for as long as I can remember, I thought I wanted to do my own thing. And actually, for me, the moment, you know, I was I'm a bit of a planner, a chaotic one, but, you know, I like to have a plan. And, you know, I always thought, okay, I need to have, you know, 6 months worth of work lined up. You know, I need to have all these things. These are the criteria that I need to actually make the leap. And for me, it's actually only when I got kind of completely burnt out in my job. You know, I loved working there. You know, it'd been brilliant. But, you know, I just realized after a while, and I say a while, I was there for like 15 years. But when I realized, okay, this isn't working for me anymore, this isn't giving me what I want, it doesn't suit me. So sort of unintentionally went freelance, in as much as I decided I can't stay working here. And so for me, that was a good lesson in, do you know what, sometimes you've got to do stuff. You know, I could have easily stayed there another 15 years or longer, waiting for the perfect criteria, you know, the perfect arrangement of things for the stars to align. But actually, sometimes you've got to do stuff before you think you're ready. And, you know, I was lucky in that, you know, I'd done a little bit of freelancing kind of on the side of what I'd, you know, been doing. And I had a strong network amongst student union people. So, you know, I wasn't starting from scratch completely. But for me, it's when I'm, you know, pottering around in my garden in between meetings, or, you know, being able to jump between really interesting projects and kind of have some variety that I think has shown me like this was the right decision. And, you know, it hasn't ended up with the, you know, big fancy offices, massive agency that I thought it would. But like, that's fine. I like being my one little weird person. That's kind of fine. And, you know, doing a little bit of lots of different things definitely suits me. Yeah.
Lovely. I mean, for the viewers, if you look behind Joel there, there's plenty of space for a pool table and a fridge for ideas. So yeah, look, let's talk about COVID. It's not over. I'm keen to understand from you the impact COVID has had and what impact you've sort of generally seen across the board. Do you think it's had more of an impact on the so-called smaller players, if you will?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's hard to say, isn't it? Because, you know, even like two, you know, organisations, you know, that are fairly similar would have been impacted differently. I think, you know, working with student unions, so that, you know, they're based in every UK university and they do all sorts of things. So they are, you know, the ultimate small and scrappy thing. They do what they do on a shoestring budget with a small team. I think they're amazing. But they, you know, they'll provide like welfare advice. They, you know, democratic organisations, they run sports clubs, societies, a whole bunch of things. And for them, obviously, you know, like with most organisations, COVID really forced them to dramatically change their model of delivery. Most of them are used to kind of sitting in their offices, doing a lot of stuff. And actually, as a sector, I think they were a bit behind the curve on digital, you know, because they'd been doing, you know, a lot of them had been doing the same sort of things for a long time and they were kind of fine. And so it really, you know, it did force them to improvise. But I think that that's where they really shone, because they were so, like, they really believe in what they're doing and they really wanted to make it work. And students as a group have often been left out of a lot of kind of official government support, kind of financial support and other things. And I think it really showed that the magic of being small, being kind of believing in what you do and wanting to do good things for the people you support. So, you know, yeah, they were all of a sudden pivoting to do their kind of student elections online, because a lot of them would have been doing those when lockdown first hit. So, yeah. You know, that was a real thing. And I, you know, I think it's amazing that they were able to do things and, you know, and in a lot of cases, probably adapted quicker than, you know, some, you know, like a lot of universities are often sort of slightly bigger machines with more layers of things and committees and, you know, stuff. So I think that was a really good example of being able to pivot, being able to adapt and, you know, making things work. So, you know, I think that's great. And also doing that all on a shoestring budget without having enough staff, you know, so I think that's definitely, you know, they were able to make things happen in a way that perhaps bigger organizations didn't, or, you know, it's different.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that you said in your answer there, which really stood out to me, was about doing good things. So I'm keen to learn from you, and feel free to disagree, but certainly my own experience, at least where you will now, certainly in my own experience, I see less of bigger organisations doing good things, and I see more smaller organisations doing good things. Why do you think that's the case, or why do you think that's not the case?
I think, and again, sweeping generalisation, a lot of those bigger companies doing good things are doing them because it's good PR, or doing them to, you know, jump on a bandwagon, feel they should, don't want to be called out on Twitter. You know, and we've seen, you know, things like Black Lives Matter, climate crisis. There's a lot of, like, greenwashing, pinkwashing, astroturfing, you know, throw in your invented word, you know, whatever you want. So it's not really authentic. But I think where, you know, with a lot of smaller organisations, a lot of them are, you know, set up in response to a particular need, or are set up by people who, you know, are affected by something or who strongly believe in something. And also they're just often closer to the people that they, or the cause that they're, you know, related to. So, you know, working in a students' union, well, I had students working in my team. I could walk out the office. There's a bunch of students there. You know, it was really, you know, close. And, you know, for a while I was the person managing our social media, so I could see what students were saying, and I could wander down the hall and tell our chief exec, tell our elected officers. But in a big kind of corporate environment, you're often detached, like physically or through layers of management, and through kind of the big sort of machine of being a big corporate. That means you're not hearing that stuff, or, you know, you might get a report from a focus group that happened several months ago, but you are distanced from that. So I think, you know, you see a lot of those small organizations who are just like, they believe in their cause, they believe in what they're doing, and it's often done with or by people who are really closely associated, rather than slapping a rainbow on something and pretending that all of a sudden you're really inclusive, in a way that is just not as authentic.
Until the month ends and you change it back, right?
Oh, yeah. Heaven forbid you should accidentally look more inclusive than you need to. Definitely not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree with your answer more there. Thank you very much for sharing that. We are rapidly approaching the end of the episode, but I've got a couple more questions to ask you, so I'm going to squeeze them in. And the first one is, if there are people listening to this episode or watching this episode who are indeed part of these sort of smaller and scrappier organizations, generally feeling a little bit disillusioned or looking for some sort of wisdom or advice, what advice would you give them?
God, they need to go somewhere else. I'm not sure I'm the best thing to come to. I really feel for them if they do. But for me, actually, it's been about finding other people who are in similar positions, because it's so easy to look at, you know, things like case studies and conference talks from the big names, from the big companies, and to think, well, we'll never be able to do that. So for me, it's been finding other people who work in my sector or who share my values, and to look for those things. And, you know, definitely. But also, I think, you know, you can look at those big case studies, and yeah, you might not be able to do what they've done, but you can still learn from them. You can still say, okay, well, you know, they did this thing and they learned that. How can I apply that to what I'm doing? Because often a lot of those principles are transferable, or, you know, you can just do your version of it. So I think don't be put off by that. It's very easy when you're, you know, big and shiny to do stuff that looks big and shiny. But actually, I like talking to people who tell you the kind of warts and all real version. Yeah. And, you know, speak to other people who face similar challenges and similar kind of issues, because they're your people. Find your people. And don't get distracted by the show-offs.
Love that. Find your people. I need that on a t-shirt, actually.
Hey, maybe that's my next plate to spin off. Make some merch.
Well, it's on this recording now, so I'll take 80%. I just, Joe, this has been brilliant. And before we wrap up, I'd like to steal something that I heard from a different podcast, because YOLO. What is one thing that you'd love to talk about or mention that I have not discussed or asked you yet?
I don't know. You've been pretty comprehensive. I'd say one of the things that I do like talking about is how being small means that you can be authentic and real and like live your values. You're not kind of beholden to other people. You don't have shareholders or a massive like board that you can do things. Being small means you can be real. You can, you know, choose your clients and projects based on what you think rather than having to consult with a billion people. Maybe that's just me being antisocial, but I think, you know, yeah, being small means you get to be you rather than having to be molded and kind of do the kind of politics thing of being a bigger thing.
Love that. What a way to wrap up the episode. Thank you very much. Joe, you've been fantastic. Before we go, where can people find you, follow you, hire you, learn more about you?
Well, my website is 25dots.co.uk. And that, yeah, you can read a little bit more about me and what I do there. But I'm mostly on Twitter, where I'm just at Joe Walters. So that's good for a mix of rants, cat pictures and random things. I'm always so conscious when I give it out that I think, what have I been tweeting recently? Like, that's probably nonsense. So I'll make sure before this goes out, I've said something very clever and intellectual. But also, you know, I'll be at the next Brighton SEO. So if anyone is coming along, it'd be really great to see people there.
Yeah, definitely. All being well, this will be released before Brighton SEO happens. So please do seek out Joe. She is an excellent human being. well worth getting together after a year to make this happen. Thank you so much for
thank you for
bringing
having
your
me.
Wisdom.
You're dusting off your mic, especially.
I know, yeah. Let's hope it works. and yeah, look, that's it. As always, please like, rate, share, and subscribe. Don't forget, you can get this on YouTube or Spotify video. I will see you again for the next episode. Joe, you've been a legend. Thank you very much. Just discovered there's a new button here which allows me to do this.
More things should have a button that let you applaud yourself.
That's brilliant. I'm going. Joe's going. Thank you very much, and I'll see you on the next episode.